Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Justin Ryan Bizarro Show. I'm Justin Bizarro. I'm your host. That's B-I-Z-Z-A-R-R-O. You can find me on Instagram at Justin Bizarro. Again, that's B-I-Z-Z-A-R-R-O. If you want to find us and listen to us, you can find us on Spotify or wherever else you grow yourself through podcasts. I guarantee we're probably on every syndication there is. But again, thank you, Spotify. And with that being said, I have a very special guest that I've met recently over the last 6 months. He's a true hustler out of New York City. His name is Miles Casso, and he represents Hollywood Productions.
Yes, sir.
And he's from Queens, New York, which I know very well after all my time in Astoria and Astoria, Queens, and then also doing all the New York City hospitals food. I spent a lot of time there. And my family, the Italian side, actually grew up in Arthur Avenue in the Bronx, so love that. And my ex-wife was from there. She was Bangladesh. So, like, Jackson Heights and me are, like, you know, we spent a lot of time there. And I grew a huge love for Indian food and Bengali food. So, Miles, right. How are you doing today?
I'm doing really, really well. You know, the weather's a little choppy in New York City. Yeah. But I'm still, you know, I appreciate it. I'm up. I accomplished a lot already in a day. So, I'm feeling good. I'm feeling great.
So, Miles, I want to tell your story. Tell me where you grew up, how you grew up, because you've entered the music business and you were sort of a late bloomer into the music business. I've heard a little bit of the story, but I don't know the whole thing, so I'm also going to be learning most of it at the same time. So tell me where you grew up, what your interests were, and then how you ended up in music.
Oh, man, my story is definitely crazy. We're going to get to the key points mainly. So basically, I grew up in Queensbridge, New York. Me personally, growing up, I really had no ambitions of doing music. It's crazy. My mom's named me Miles, you know, not even after Miles Davis, but just the similarities, how it would, like, the parallels between the Miles would eventually, you know, I would run into that course. But I grew up playing basketball like any, like, New York City kid, like, playing basketball. I've been really good at playing basketball. And even like sixth grade, even in the first grade, I was like one of them kids that, like, averaging 20 points, like, playing for a school I wasn't supposed to be playing, a school I wasn't even going to. So, like, I was playing sports early. That was, like, my thing. And really, like, I realized, like, in hindsight, like, through playing sports is really where I got my determination to do everything else. Like that's why I realized how important sports is, man. It's so crazy. As you dig into your journey, you start digging into yourself. But yeah, I grew up playing sports. My mom's was our only child. I didn't know my father. I met him like one time, but we still don't have a relationship. So basically I was raised by a single parent, in the rough streets of Queensbridge. And, yeah, man, my mom's always had, like, pretty much, like, really, like, retail jobs. She didn't really have, as they quote-unquote say, a good job until she got, like, later on in life, like, when I was in high school. But, yeah, I grew up, like, in the projects, but, you know, honestly, it didn't really feel like poverty to me. You really don't know you're in poverty. I mean, for me, I didn't know I was in poverty until later. Like, you know, because I feel like my mom took care of all the essentials. Like, I didn't miss no meals. I had clothes on my back. I had fun. I had my video games. So my life was pretty much, I was good, you know. I'm not, you know, can't say it was like all struggle, even though there was struggle times. But, yeah, I grew up, you know, pretty good, and got into sports later. And that's what I did with the sports. That was like my upbringing, man. And then eventually, in high school is when I started making music, which is crazy. So I end up doing like a fifth year in high school because I was doing craziness. Like, I played for a Catholic school, and then I transferred to a public school. When I got to public school, it was a lot of freedom that I just wasn't used to. But I end up.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, man. I wasn't used to that. Like, so, but in that, I appreciate the journey because, when I did my fifth year, I started dating this woman, which is so crazy. She was like one of the most beautiful girls in our whole high school. I was excited to date her, but, come to find out, I didn't know, but she had a whole nother boyfriend. So I was kind of like the side guy and didn't know I was the side guy. But the crazy thing is that in hindsight of it is, her main boyfriend was a music producer. And before I had figured that out, I said, like, when I leave high school, you know what? I'm going to start making music. And so the crazy thing is I end up one day, she's with me, we hanging out. I get a phone call, and it's the guy, like, yo, do you know blah, blah, blah? And I'm like, yeah, she's actually with me right now. And but to make a long story short, I actually met up with him, and come to find out he was a music producer. And he kind of ended up telling me, like, yo, you should just get an MPC and start making beats. That's how he started making beats. But it kind of just made the whole thing, like, you know, for me, I thought, like basketball was my natural ability. I feel like we was all born with a natural ability at that time that we couldn't really, and we should just focus on our natural abilities. And he kind of explained it to me, like, yo, you could just pick up and just learn this and grow into this and become something else. And that kind of put me on my path to music production, being a side dude for this girl I really liked. Like, so, you know.
Yeah, I like this. I'm going to anchor this really quick because, like, actually, I'm going to let you keep telling the story, but I want to come back and anchor something with you, with your where you grow up. All of a sudden, you're a basketball person. You have this hustle, and you get into music. But let's talk about what happens here. Like, this woman comes into your life, like, and this guy, and then you're like, okay, well, I, you know, she was two-timing me, or I was the two-timer, and right. But out of it became this beautiful thing of music. Like, how'd you cross that bridge? Like, you're all of a sudden like, hey, dude, would you teach me music? We were with the same girl. Like, will you teach me music? Like, how do you cross that bridge?
So basically, it wasn't even how we it was just one of the, we had a conversation. I was like, what do you do? He was like, I'm a music producer. I'm like, holy shit. I was thinking about doing it. Because one of my close friends was a singer. He had sang in church his whole life. And I was like, yo, we should put you in the studio and record your demo. And that's how that went down. And I had a conversation with the dude. I was like, yo, so what do you do? And he was like, I'm a music producer. So I was like, wow, so what do you need? I'm thinking, because at that time, I'm thinking like, yo, like, you have to be born with the skill to do it. You know, I'm thinking all of these people I idolize as music producers, they were born with the skill and, like, you know, I didn't know no better. You know, they don't really teach you this in school. They don't really teach you how to figure out your own individual path like that. Like, you know, like, I felt like, yo, if this is a natural talent, you kind of roll with it. Because that's what I see other people doing. But he was explaining to me, like, yo, nah, you should just get an MPC and start figuring it out. And you'll figure it out. And after he told me that, I went to go get an MPC and I bought a piano. And then I started paying for my own piano lessons. So that's what made me get into music, like me having a conversation with him. So without me meeting him, he wouldn't have made it for me. He wouldn't have made it like a visible dream for me. Like, yo, you can do this. Like, you know, like meeting somebody do it, for me, once I meet somebody that I've seen do it or seen somebody do it, I know I can do it back then. Like, it's different now. Now I can, I don't have to see nobody do it to be like, yo, all right, I can do it. But back then I needed to see somebody. I needed to speak to somebody. I needed somebody that materialized the dream for me, like, you know. So he materialized the dream with me through that conversation, and I just ever since then I just never looked back, actually.
I love this, and I just want to start to tie this all together. Okay, one, I agree with you. Basketball in New York City, running around. I had employees when I did the New York City hospitals that worked for us in Brooklyn. Because we did all the food for all the hospitals out of Brooklyn and then shipped them out every night for food the next day, lunch, dinner, and then breakfast the following day. So we're just in time producing from scratch for the city of New York for over 18 years. But one of the things I know is that basketball is part of the culture there. All the kids go play basketball. It's something they do. Yep. It's what your friends do. It's what keeps you outside. It keeps you out of trouble a lot of the time, potentially. Yep. And so there's a lot of things like that that go on. But I also want to start to anchor you grew up in Queens. One, let's talk about Queensbridge, okay? Nas grew up there, right? Like, that's where Nas is from. He's a hip-hop star. He's in the music business. So your origins are there, okay? You have Lost Boys there from Queens as well.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
I don't want to get into all of New York City because we would have to, like, name all of the Wu-Tang Clan and everyone else if we got into all of New York City and its impact on music. You know, yes. 50 Cent, you know, again, Queens, and I believe, and so on and so forth. So Tell me about like that influence on you. Talk to me about growing up in Queensbridge and just there's and in Queens and the amount of music and music has had that influenced you since you discovered music. What's that like for you? Because there's so many what I would call straight up Hall of Famers that come out of New York City, but especially Queens.
No, definitely. And especially Queensbridge, honestly.
Let's talk about that. Yeah.
Yes. And Mobb Deep is from my neighborhood. So I'm not even going to lie. Like when I first started making beats, like a lot of times they say like you mimic what you like until you grow into your own. A lot of my music would sound like Mobb Deep, like because that was my direct influence. Like even though there were people before that, like a lot of the pioneers, you think of Molly Maul. Molly Maul's from Queensbridge, DJ Molly Maul. One of the early pioneers that took hip hop to the next level. But I really wasn't influenced by that. I knew who he was, but didn't know the backstory. But my direct influence was Mobb Deep. Like Mobb Deep was my direct influence. I was completely influenced by them in the beginning. I used to see them, so it made it even more tangible. They used to come to the neighborhood, hang out, just sit on benches. So it just really that heightened my like, okay, this is a real thing. These are real people. Like, these are not just celebrities you see on TV, because sometimes the celebrities don't seem tangible until you meet them, honestly, a lot of time. So Havoc and Mobb Deep, definitely. Havoc is the music producer in Mobb Deep. He was definitely one of the direct influences in the beginning that was from locally. Like, so I can definitely say that, you know. And Nas, I was a Nas fan. He's a legend. Mobb Deep also the legendary. So it's so much music from around our way. Capone Noriega, Tragedy Gaddafi, Nature, Cormega. So it's like a cesspool of really super talented people. Like we have the most talent in a condensed area. So
yeah, it's crazy. Yeah, Marley Marr, Rich the Kid, I think was Noriega at one time, but maybe not. N-O-R-E. You have Chuck D. You have Ja Rule is from Queens, interestingly. Yes. LL Cool J, Cool G Rap, yes. Q-Tip. Yes.
Woo.
You know? Yep. Yeah. And like there's just ton of people. You know, Young MC back in the day, even though he wasn't a gangster rapper, he was from there. Geez, I could go on. Craig G.
Oh, Craig G's from the neighborhood. Craig
yeah.
G, I used to watch. MC Shan. I used to see MC yeah. Shan walk on my block and give me high fives when I was a young kid.
Yeah. And I mean, we talked about the Lost Boys. I mean, there's so many other artists from there, but those are just to name a few. Queen Latifah, I believe, is from Queens also. I don't know where, though. Fredro Starr, I think, was another. Jam Master J.
Yeah.
Jam Master J was from Queens. Waka Flocka Flame, he's a newer artist, he's from Queens. Like I'm just trying to think of just and Lloyd Banks, who is part of the G-Unit.
Yep.
All of those guys. So I mean it's just going on and on and on and on and on. And Havoc, which is one of my favorite. I like Mobb Deep as well, you know.
Absolutely.
Chuck D, awesome. And
of course.
And so there's just all these people. Tony Yayo, who's also part of the G-Unit or was in and out of incarceration, but is part of G-Unit. All of those guys came out of Queens and those areas. So Prodigy, he passed away, I believe, like 2018, 2017. Like,
right.
And the reason I know this is because this music had huge influence on me, especially the Lost Boys, especially Nas. Growing up, you know, I became a fan of it. Why? Because I understood hip-hop tells a story. And not many people
yes.
realize that. Like, if you want to listen to real music that really tells the story and the hustle and, you know, picking yourself up from the bottom and taking your situation and breaking down the constructs that are in your head and doing something better with your life, this music
yep.
is it. And it tells a story. And it's just so much deeper than other music, in my opinion. I'm a fan of all music, mostly.
Me too.
But for some reason, I really attach to some of this stuff as well, because the stories, especially when I was impactful as a teenager, it gave me inspiration. It let me know that no matter where I was from or what I did, I could hustle my way. I could work hard and learn a skill. And to your point, it didn't matter if I was a late bloomer or not. It didn't matter. Right. I was a soccer player. That was my thing. I did it. And then all of a sudden, I'm 18 years old and the food comes into my life. I'm like, oh, I'm going to do food. And then weirdly, all my life I've had interest in cameras. I've had interest in singing. I've had interest in other things. And it's like this little hidden thing inside of me. And now all of a sudden, I have been doing podcasts for 5 years almost. And you know, I went up and down in there. Yeah, I went up and down in there. I almost quit numerous times, but people kept encouraging me to go on. Yeah. And now I have four podcasts. And so, but now I'm also doing a TV show and we're in development that might take off called Foodtopia. And it's like, okay, I'm getting along here and I may get into developing and producing movies, maybe even being in part of movies. And it's like, who knew that I had this talent? But here's the thing that I love about it. And here's the thing about being in New York when I was in New York and living in Queens, and my ex-wife grew up in Queens since she was four. She came from Bangladesh when she was four. But you grow up there, you realize the hustle. You're in a shark tank, okay? And if you don't become a shark and you don't hunt other sharks, meaning you want to be the biggest, that doesn't mean I'm purposely taking anyone out or knocking down buildings or tall popping them. But what it means is that I have to be willing to be the biggest shark in the tank. And in order to do that, you have to keep hustling. And while there's a lot of people hustling and becoming big sharks in the tank, you know, the ones who really do well, this is why I like Wu-Tang Clan, because he took a bunch of talents. He took a bunch of sharks and potential sharks, I would say, and made a unity where they all conquered the world together.
Exactly. You know,
and they had a round table to do it, even though, you know, the Reza wasn't, you know, the mad mastermind. He had a round table. They were all equal. And the way he did everything was just so cool. And the way he represented all of them and gave them solo albums, but also had collaborative albums as the Wu-Tang Clan. So there's a lot of this that goes on in New York City. And because the nature of the situation in New York, where there's so many people clustered together in small spaces or in housing developments or in neighborhoods, whatever we want to call them, you often find friends and other people who have the American dream, who have this hustle inside of them, who want to pick themselves up and go the distance. So let's go to where we were talking about. So you start playing the piano. You're paying for your own lessons. So, how do you get to where you are now? Because I'm just going to anchor this with the audience. Every once in a while, he releases a beat, and I listen to all of them. But there's, like once or twice a week, I'll get hooked on a beat where I'll literally use it to pump myself up every day. I'll even throw my own raps on it just because I think it's fun.
I love it. I love
it. I'm not very good at it, but it's fun for me.
I love it.
Yeah, or I'll sing a tune to it, or I'll sing a song to my dog that is nonsense. But it's, you know, it makes me actually think of Consequence, who I think is actually from Queens also. But
yeah,
anyway,
she's from Queens, yes.
And, but it's kind of crazy because I really love what you're doing and I love the way you're putting music together. So will you talk about that? Run is from Queens also, I believe.
Of course. Both of them.
Both of them.
Course.
So, I mean, Def Jam Records came out of Queens, right?
Of course. Russell Simmons.
Yeah.
Nah, I said it, man. Russell Simmons, Run, y'all, man. Come on.
Yeah.
Man.
Holy crap. Think about that. His influence on the world. I mean, goodness.
Absolutely. And that's honestly, before we go into that, it's crazy. Russell Simmons is the first book I read on my own. So it definitely and you know, I wasn't even vegan then yet, but wow, I just look at the how much influence that book changed my life. It really taught me about progress and productivity and no matter how rich you are, you're gonna run through these hurdles and understand you gotta know how to navigate these terrains.
Yeah, that Super Rich book is the one you're talking about, and I've read it. It was one of the it changed my life in 2011. I read it when it came out. Someone's like, you got to read this book, because I was really trying to read 10 pages a day. Even back in the day, I had good mentors and people telling me to read. And I touched that book, and it blew my mind, and it changed my business and my personal entrepreneurism in a way that I can't even explain, because it was you need to believe in yourself enough to go out there and do it, and then eventually people will pay for it. You know, everyone's thinking you need to do it and people are going to pay for it right away. But when you're a gifted individual, you need to shine your light as bright as possible. Then people are going to come to you. They're going to pay you for it. And then by that time, you don't even want the money. You're like, I'm already fulfilled by just doing it. And then the money just shows up. And I think that's why he calls it Super Rich. It's not actually meant to make you rich. It's actually to bring you peace of mind. But then it changes your trajectory.
Absolutely, because you know what they say, it's really like, it's not truly about the goals, it's about the journey, it's about the person you become on the journey. Because understand, like, I realize as you build your character and you build these traits, you're really ready to navigate anything that comes at you. And the thing about it is, even if one thing doesn't work out, when you pivot, that pivot is a lot smoother because you've been working on yourself or you've been fine-tuning yourself. So even when you do something for a long time and you pivot, yo, that transition will be way smoother because you've been working on yourself. You've been working on these things, like, you know, like, and yeah, it helps, man. It helps. That's why it's truly about the journey. You can't really get caught up in the goals. Yes, I have my goals, but I make sure, like, my day-to-day is really about building myself up. Like, that's what I'm doing.
Yeah, and I think actually now that I said that, the first book of his I read was actually called Do You.
That's the book I read.
Yeah, that was 2007. It's Do You was the first one. I read Super Rich later, but Do You was the one that actually really changed my life. That was 2007. That's when I expanded into new businesses and I got into culinary equipment with my business partners and building restaurants and food trucks, even though we were in the hospital food game and long-term care food game. So, like, that book really changed my life. That was 2007. Holy crap, he's written a lot of books. And I'm thinking about it now. I think I've read, like, five of his books. But what an influential human.
Right.
So, let's go back to the piano lessons. Like, so what happens? Like, you start picking up piano. Is it that you want to be a producer, a music producer? Do you want to be a musician? What is it sort of that's going on in your head as you're doing these music lessons, and where does it lead you?
Okay, so for me, I'm like, yo, my boy's a singer. We're going to make his demo. So my first thing is, like, for me, I like to I like to study the theory of things. I like to study how things work. I like to understand how music works. So from there, I was like, yo, if you're going to make beats, you need to know how music works. You need to learn how to play the piano. That's the first thing that came to me. So I was like, yo, listen, let me learn theory. Let me learn some musical theory. And then I can equate this to I can equate this to making beats, because it's crazy. In my early times of making beats, and I would like, so for example, a lot of my piano teachers, I had this huge keyboard I used to take to piano class. So from there, I remember I used to play my beats for my piano teachers, my early piano teachers, and they would just be like, how do you know, like, what sounds like you're playing everything the same key, but you don't know theory? I'm like, it just either sounds good or it doesn't. And my piano teacher was impressed early, like, I see where you, like, you just have, you know what's supposed to sound good, because, like, you don't understand keys and scales and nothing like that, but you're playing everything in the same key, and it all sounds good. He said, that's something to really think about, that you naturally have that other people don't. So, you know, I just was honing my skills after that, like, yo, learning how to play on the piano. I went through, like, 10 piano teachers, and maybe, like, two of them taught me the things that I really use today, but it was, like, trial and error, like, figuring out who I was going to get the most from and develop from. So I was just going through piano teachers, and then I found, like, my last piano teacher was amazing. He summed it all up. Like, listen, once you learn scales, you'll learn chords. So once I learned scales, I started learning everything. And one thing he taught me also is, like, playing in key. Like, when you play notes, he would have me, like, sing in the same key of what chords I'm playing. So now, like, no matter when I hear somebody singing, like, in person or on TV, I can hear or see, like, all right, they're not singing in the right key. Like, it's not in the right key. Not sure exactly what key they in, but I can find it very quickly. But I know that I can hear it off back. That's due to, like, my tutelage with my piano teacher. So, like, you know, it was all about, what do I have to do to be a great music producer? That's what this is all about. What do I have to do that?
It's interesting because I find this true for singers. You know, they, and we're going to have a few on the show. One in particular, Lily is her name, and she'll be on the show. You'll see, we'll release her episode later after this one for the audience. But it's one of those things where she was the first one that brought my attention to it. And then all of a sudden now, any musicians I mentor, like I do mental mind for the mental part, the toughness, the spirituality. I'm not a musician. I don't have that skill, but I can pretty much turn anyone into a high performer through like changing their lifestyle, you know, the basics, stuff like that, which is really cool and watching them succeed. But singers and kids who want to sing or people that eventually discover they want to sing, even if they have a late bloomer like Miles is talking about. And I was a late bloomer in other ways. Like now I'm discovering podcasts and television and film. Even though I had an interest on it, I didn't bloom into it until recently.
Right.
But you sing until it sounds good to you. You don't know that you're not hitting notes. You're just trying to make it sound better. Kids sing and sing and sing until it sounds good. Right. They become musicians. Not everyone does it. People get afraid of it. It sounds bad. I shouldn't do that. But the reality is you need to keep doing it until you sound good, until you get your tone right. You'll naturally find the chords. It just sounds correct. You don't need the training necessarily. What the training does once you've had the practice is align it. And I think this is just my opinion anyway. I think too many people get caught up in the education of music and the foundations of music versus it's something you hear. Like when we were back in the day in the woods and we couldn't write down music, we didn't even know what the letters were, and we're around the campfire and we're on drums and playing like weird things. We're just trying to make it sound good.
Yeah, exactly, man. And it's a feeling. People don't understand. Like, that's the real thing. You're triggering a feeling and an emotion. Like, you know, so like at the end of the day, like sometimes like we're just not all right. You might hit this note and it's not in a perfect key, but it feels good. So we keeping that. We keeping that because it feels good. And I know when people hear that, they're going to feel good and it's going to trigger emotion. And that's what you want. You want the music. For me, I like to make music that, helps people get through like different emotional problems. Like, you know, you might be feeling sad. Sometimes you might need something to build you up and feel happy. Or sometimes you might need something that explains your sadness to you or is relatable to the sadness you have. So it's like, I just like to make that music that heals people and helps them navigate this tough world, you know? So, but it's more about feeling than anything. I agree. Yeah. Like, you know,
so let's talk about like, how do you come up with, like, what do you go from here? You want to get your buddy on your track. You're like, I'm going to start him doing it. He's a singer. I want to produce his music. Like, where does life go from here? Like, how do you get this off the ground? Like, what happens when you do, and what's your sort of journey to where you are now?
Oh, yeah, that's great. So my first artist, which is crazy, he's a pretty big battle rapper. His name is Hollow the Don. So Hollow the Don.
I love this. Go on.
Yeah, so that was my first artist I signed. So I actually found him through my cousin. That's like my cousin's best friend. My cousin, when I started the label, my cousin was like, yo, I got this kid that raps. He's amazing. My best friend, blah, blah. I'm like, nah, I don't even. But he's like, nah, come with me. So I went to him. I went to go see him battle somebody in New Jersey at St. Peter's College. So I went to go see him battle at St. Peter's College. He was so amazing. I was like, oh, this guy's out of here. So I signed him. I started working with him. We started doing some things. Eventually, we kind of parted ways, but then we linked up again when I helped get him on 106 in Park. So I had a connection up at BET. And he wanted to go up there and do Freestyle Friday. And he had went to the tryouts and made it, but they had lost. They just stopped picking up his calls. I think that was the situation. But I had a connection up there. Like, listen, my boy had one in a round in Houston, blah, blah, blah. Let's get him on there. So got him on 106 in Park. He won all the weeks. That started getting some notoriety. Then I got him in what? And ironically, I got him in this other battle called the Fight Club, which was big in the early 2000s. Fight Club was huge. So I got him on Fight Club. We started doing our thing. But then I realized, like, you know, that rap was changing. Like, I started seeing, like, how battle rap was becoming its own entity, and, like, making songs and stuff was, like, a whole different thing. Like, before it was kind of, like, in a lane, in the same lane where they, like, the battle rappers would eventually turn into rappers making songs, but now like these kids are completely just being battle rappers and they're making a great living from just battle rapping. Like, and I seen it back then, like, yo, this is becoming its whole own thing. Like I would compare it to like boxing to UFC. Like, it was becoming UFC. And I started to realize that I didn't want to go on that journey, and me and him kind of parted ways. So that was like the first artist I signed and started really getting my toes wet in the music business. And to this day, he's doing pretty well for himself. I'm really happy for him. Like, you know, he figured it out with the Battle World. He's been on the Cartoon Network. He's been on he does voiceovers everywhere because of that. You know, and I'm just happy that I played a piece in that. But through the time, I just kept signing artists, trying to figure it out. It's like, it's really like dating. I'm not even gonna lie. Like, it's truly like dating. You just gotta date until you find one where y'all like completely aligned and y'all got the same vision and you can see the long haul with it. But it's pretty tough. It's a tough terrain to navigate for real. Like, it's crazy because, like, you know, it's hard to keep. I realized, like, it's very hard to keep everybody happy in a situation while things are not happening the way they want them to happen, you know? So, but I'm sorry, I'm in New York City outside.
I know, this makes the episode even better because you can't hear that stuff when I'm in the studio in New York, so everyone's getting a feel of it through you.
Yeah, exactly, man. We outside. But yeah, you know, so throughout time, I just continuously, you know, I found different artists. We worked. Then things kind of just go in a whole different direction, man. And as of late, I pretty much been like, yo, promoting myself now. I said at the end of the day, you know what? I've been trying to make everybody else a star because I've been fighting it off myself. Like, yo, I don't want to be on the forefront. I want to help other people be stars. I just want to play the background. But at this point, I realized that to really, like, make this thing happen, I'm going to have to make myself into that, and then I can worry about all the other stuff. Because, like, I need the synergy. I realized, like, with me having the synergy, I can move that, and I can move that and use that to leverage myself, like, you know. And that'll open up bigger doors for me. So let me make myself into a star and make myself have momentum as a music producer, and that can align other things for me. So that's what I've been doing as of late. Like, that's why you've been seeing me, like, ever since December 6th, I've been dropping, like, 2 beats a week, just continuously feeding the algorithm. I said, this time I'm just going to feed the algorithm, feed it nonstop. Like, I'm not going to stop. I'm not going to think about it. I'm not going to second guess, like, is this beat not good enough, or is it not? No. I've been making beats every single day. So I've just been making beats every single day, posting it on. I just started posting it on YouTube. My YouTube channel is growing. I just started, like, this month. It's already growing. I'm like, so I'm just, you know, focusing on me and my development and bringing the momentum to me, you know. So that's been a plan as of late, you know.
So I love that you have a YouTube channel. I love that you're doing this. And I can relate to this a lot because I spent a majority of my career picking up everyone else and building my teams around me. And, you know, I'm not going to say this without – I don't want anyone to take this the wrong way, but I'm going to say it this way. When I tried to lift up everyone, I was almost pushing them. I was like the sweeper in soccer or whatever, and I would I push people, not necessarily pull them. I was leading, but not necessarily from the front, if that makes sense. And I believed in all of them, and I grew them. But what I quickly realized is that by doing things the way that I was doing, they were only limited by how far I could push them, and I couldn't push them. And if I didn't grow and I didn't start to get out in the forefront and I didn't take risks like doing this podcast or you know, going out and doing public speaking to universities and entrepreneurs and other things like that, I could only push them so far. But if I turned around and I naturally led them and it became attraction, not necessarily promotion or pushing or pulling or whatever we try to do as leaders, it changes the game. It changes the game, and weirdly, all the people that you were trying to lead, they don't – it's weird because you want them to have all this potential, and they possibly do, but because we were falling short, or me, I'll speak for me, I was falling short because I wasn't leading totally from the front. I wasn't blazing the trail in the way that I needed to. I wasn't doing what I was wanting them to do, which is go out and do things and do these things and be the star and the recognition of these companies, even though they're my companies. And they're like, well, you don't do it, you know? And I'm like, holy crap. you know, maybe they're right. Maybe I need to go be the face, like, more than I am now. I need to go put myself out there. I need to be vulnerable. I need to go network more. I need to do it publicly. I need to start something different. And here's the weird part. Like, Miles, you have come into my life. We have, like, Brett from New York State of Mind. There's the Urban Vegan Kitchen, which you're a part of, also helping those guys out. There's
absolutely
so many other entrepreneurs and people that are high level performers like we are. But when we lowered ourselves, and this is the wrong way to say it, but we lowered ourselves to help everyone else first. Yep. We weren't putting on our own mask first. We weren't allowing ourselves to demonstrate what we wanted for everyone else. And we can't help anyone else because we were ourselves were limited. And by I mean lower ourselves, I mean that I wasn't performing at my highest output because I was spending so much time worrying about everyone else performing at theirs.
Right, right. I completely agree, man. I completely agree. Like, all the money I done spent tons of money. I done spent, like, and that's the thing, though. You can't want it bad. You can't want it for them as bad as you want it. Like, as bad as, like, you can't be that thing. Like, you can't. They got to want it as bad as you want it. Like, you can't, like, you can't be the extra. They got to want it. I want to meet people that want it, like, more than me. Like, I don't want it. That's just the reality.
Yeah, me too.
Like, that's it. Like, if you don't want it more than me, like, that's a new, like, that's my new, like, standard now. Like, if you don't want it more than me and you don't show any of your day-to-day activity and your consistency, we don't really need to be around each other or we don't really need to do that business. So at this point now, like, working with an artist, you know, I'm just not, you know, I'm pretty much working on building me. I need to build me, and once I build me, everything else will definitely work itself out. Like, you know, shit, cause I done spent money. I done went damn near broke spending
on other people.
You know, yeah, man, like, for real, hundreds of thousands of dollars, like, for real, like, this shit is crazy, man.
I agree with you.
You know, yeah, man. So it's like, at this point, I'm just like, you know what? Let me work on me. Let me develop this. Let me get this going. And then from there, then I'll let the universe align it the way it's supposed to. But I know, like, right now, I need to be on the forefront. I need to be that, because one thing about it is, like, you just know, you know your output. You know that you're not going to stop. So you don't have to really worry about, like, the thing about it is, my thing is, like, when you're hot, when you bring other people into your life, they can have your synergy. But no matter what, you can keep yourself going. And no matter what, whatever, how they act, they might go on their own tangent. They might be like, you know what? I don't feel like doing this. But guess what? They don't feel like doing this. I'm still going to keep going. And I have the momentum that I already built. Like, know what I mean? And I think that's just the best way to do it at this point for me. Like, you know, like, build my own and then add people to my life. Because no matter what they, how they feel, because people move up emotions a lot every day. Like, a lot of times I get up, it's not even like, yeah, I move up emotion, but it's a lot of time, like, logically, I don't feel like doing 90% of the shit I feel like doing, and I still do it. And that's just the reality. Like, you know, like, I'll get up and be like, nah, I don't feel like doing this, but I got to do it. I know I have to do it, you know? And that's just, and most people not like that. They're going to let their emotions defeat them that day, you know? And I refuse. I got to get up. Nah, let's get to it. Let's do what we got to do, you know?
Yeah, it's funny. When I actually started facing inward, all the people that were, I almost made people dependent on me a little bit. Like, they're like, oh, Justin will carry the weight. He believes in me, you know, whatever, or he's doing the business. And then when I started focusing on myself, they all got mad at me. It was like, wait a second, I've helped you how long? You don't want to support me in return? And I'm not saying this is true everywhere, but I was like, what is that? Like, I've supported you hundreds of millions of dollars potentially in all of my businesses and brought these people up and families and dreams, and I pushed you guys and wanted more for you and training classes and everything you could imagine and vacations and points from traveling, and you guys get to keep it all. And I'm like, all of a sudden I start doing my own, working about being the face of the company, trying to promote this business, grow bigger than it's ever been. I'm becoming hugely popular, which is part of the reason I have had the hiccups in the podcast, because all of a sudden the podcast the first time became so popular, everyone got really mad at me, like I was distracted or whatever. I just realized now it's no longer because I was propping them up, I was propping myself up, which is weird how that happens over years of propping people up. They then become dependent on you and they don't know how to prop themselves up. And that's what I learned. Like, I did people a disservice. I made them greedy. I made them entitled. I made them, you know, not be able to rely on their own skills. I did them a disservice. I actually, you know, what they're mad at me for is what they shouldn't really be mad at me for. What they should be mad at me for is I gave them too much and I didn't allow them to develop their own skills, not that I took it away, you know? And that's the thing, you know, and all the hate that came at me and all the stuff, especially over the last few years, as I've really started to excel this, it's always surprising to me because it's the people I invested the most in. And I'm not saying that this is your case. I'm just saying it for the audience in general. It's something to be aware of when we don't put our own mask on first. And in order to lead people, we have to be selfish leaders first, meaning we have to learn how to lead by leading ourselves, getting in our own rhythm, by excelling at what our skills are, by doing all that selfishly. And then in order to do that, and everyone's like, oh, selfishness. I'm not talking about like I'm going to steal a popsicle from a little child.
No, I'm talking about
I'm going to go to the gym. I'm going to eat healthy. I'm going to do what I need in business. I'm going to lead by what I say. I'm going to put myself out there on these podcasts. I'm going to be vulnerable and authentic and watch and let people come after me, because I think that the only way to lead is you're going to have people that don't believe in you. That's part of life. You're always going to have people, and no one's going to believe in you as much as you believe in yourself. And if you don't believe in yourself and I believe in you more than you do, then this is a problem, because then over time, you're right, that person who I believe in more than they believe in themselves, they're going to resent me for some reason. And I'm going to lose a lot of money along the way believing in them more than they believe in themselves, because they're always going to fall short because I'm putting my money into their potential and they're not even there. They don't even believe they have the same potential as I believe every human has, which is the majority of humanity. By the way, most humanity doesn't believe in themselves enough to get to where it is, and I believe in them more than they do. But it's just crazy.
I definitely see the connections and the correlations between me and you. I definitely see that. Like, you know, definitely from the Russell Simmons book to like also like betting on yourself through people. Like, you know, and you, I really like you believe in you. You believe in the vision you see for these people, but, you know, they just don't be. But, you know, one thing about it is I've learned a lot of lessons and it gave me a lot of experience. I realized, like, a lot of times what this is, you got to be overqualified to be prepared. And that's the thing. That's the thing about it. Like, you know, just know that, like, yo, these overqualifications are going to take you far. Because one thing about it is I realized, like, back then, to be honest with you, I really didn't have an idea of marketing the way I do now. Now I really understand marketing, like especially music. Like I understand, like fully, like how to market something and get it to the masses. Like I definitely do. Like with music, I understand it clearly. Like when I do a beat and I get a record back from an artist, I already start envisioning a video and thinking of a creative video that nobody else is thinking of, but staying within the means of your brand and make it make sense and trying to make it connect with people. So I understand that immediately when I do that. Like, all right, like, how are we going to make this connect with people and make it make sense with your brand without compromising the integrity? Like, so off back, you know, I really became, you know, I did a lot of reading on marketing and an experience. Like, I released a video, like, for example, I can actually go check it out. I have a video on Facebook, well over 50,000 views. It was a minute ago. I did it with this rapper named Lady Smiles. She had a record called I'm the One. And I was like, you know, I had produced the beat. I'm like, you know what? We should dress up like Morpheus and Neo, and we're gonna paint it like you're the one. Like and within that, we did like a blue and a red CD symbolizing the blue and the red pill, and she picks it, and then through the video you just go through the journey of like, you know. Exactly. So like that video did very well immediately. Like it was crazy. And ever since then, I feel like I found my formula within, like people don't even know, like what only seen a fifth of what I could do. Like this is like, once I get an artist and it's all making sense, it's through the roof. Like, because I see the whole vision for the record. I see everything. I see it clearly. Cause once I did that record and I seen how it connected with people, locally in my neighborhood in the area, it was like, wow, we ain't seen no video like this in forever, you know. And I started understanding, like, yo, all right, you know what to do music wise you know what sounds to the level where people are like, all right, this is good or great. All right, video wise you know this is how it's supposed to look. Boom, boom, boom. Now that's it, like, you know. And then I just started building upon that, man. So like, I wasn't, to go back to that, I really wasn't ready before. Now I'm really ready now, because I understand, like, it's truly not just about the music. And Yeah. So I really wasn't ready before. Now I am, man. Yeah. I just wanted to say that too.
I love this. Let's talk about this too, because you and I believe in very similar things, and I think the Russell Simmons books is part of this, because
probably
the impact on it, the healthy lifestyle, and I refer to a lifestyle because it's how I live. Like, I don't even realize it anymore, but like,
right.
You know, we sit down and everyone's doing other things and you and I are not doing those things. I won't give away to the audience just yet, but I think majority of my audience knows the lifestyle that I live. But talk to me about your lifestyle, like how you treat your body, your mindset, like in order to put the best music out there and be the best producer, you've made some big changes in your life, and you leave a different lifestyle, not just around music, but holistically in your whole life. Will you tell us about that and how
Absolutely.
You got there?
Absolutely. So, I mean, for me, I've always, you know, this goes back to sports, always realizing like working out is like, it's like how I perform at a high level. But I didn't know like food played a huge part in me functioning at a high level. So I became vegan, which is crazy. Shout out to Sugar Ray, actually.
He's gonna be Sugar on this show too. Yep.
Yeah.
Sugar Ray for mayor of New York City, by the way. I'm gonna keep pushing him until he realizes he should be the mayor of New York.
So his ex-wife actually was like she used to work for Columbia University as like a forensic toxicologist. Don't ask me what that is, but that's what she used to do.
Yeah. So I don't know what it is either.
Exactly. So she used to do that, but she ended up coming down with this rare eye disease, and Columbia, they kept like giving her like eye injections, and like they thought that, you know, that they could fix it, but it ended up getting worse. And then they started saying like it could be like fatal. Sugar Ray had met this girl before that, I guess, who kind of hipped into who like Dr. Sebi was. He had did a couple of things like a fundraiser to raise, because Dr. Sebi, it costs money to go see Dr. Sebi in Honduras and his camp. So he raised the money to send her to go see Dr. Sebi. I had seen her before that. Her eye was getting like worse, whatever. It was like bleeding. It was like bloodshot red. But when she went to go see Dr. Sebi, he cured her in 5 days. And when she came back, I didn't have a conversation or really neither one of them about it. It just made me start looking into Dr. Sebi and about food. And I started looking at food as like, wow, okay, there's a direct correlation between how I feel and what I eat. And I started realizing like, yo, if I want to perform better, I have to eat better. So I started like doing my research, and I've been vegan almost 6 years now. I stopped eating meat. I stopped eating a lot of things that was slowing me down. So it's vegan lifestyle, and definitely it's not just a vegan lifestyle. It's a combination of things. Also, like 7 years ago, before I even became vegan, which was kind of dangerous, now that I think about it, I actually made a decision to not take like medicine. I said, yo, listen, I'm gonna take the holistic approach to everything. So even before I came vegan, I actually took a holistic approach to like, I haven't taken an over the counter anything or anything in 7 years. So between me being vegan, me not taking medicine, and also me working out, and also one of the most important things is, I feel like for me, like building like my mental, like, or like building my mental capacity and like callousing my mind to deal with certain things is reading. Reading and audiobooks has been like, that has been like the cheat code for me to navigate this whole thing.
Me too.
Like without that, I'm like a fourth of myself, you know? So the reading and the audiobooks, like when I'm working out, I listen to like motivational music because I just want to be motivated. So every time I've been for at least 10 years now since I've been working out, all I do is listen to motivational quotes, because right there, all I'm doing is I'm getting myself like, you know, I'm getting myself in a mindset that like, because the funny thing about working out is you hit walls when you're working out all the time. And with them listening to the motivation, when you hit those walls, you push right through it, man. You push right through it, because I've been programming my mind for years and years and years to know how to deal with the adversity and how to deal with it emotionally, how to deal with it physically, or even how to digest it in a way, like I pick perspective of when it happens. I start going into like analyze mode, like, okay, this happens so I can do this good. So, and it just changed my whole mindset, man. And that comes from just reprogramming my body, my mind. And this is how you become like this elevated human being. Like, you know, for me, you know, those are like the pillars.
I agree with you. I don't remember how many years ago now. I don't even remember when I stopped using pharmaceuticals or over-the-counter drugs or even vitamins, because I diversify my diet to get what I need for the most part. I have no imbalances. And the reading for sure, the exercise, the healthy, like clean diet, like whole foods, like not processed crap. And my brain, like it started functioning at such a higher rate. It was just crazy. Like, I can do in one day what takes most people 4 days. So like now one of my days is, I even break it down that way because I know I'm a highly functioning human. That's why I can record, like I recorded 7 podcasts 2 days ago. I recorded 6 yesterday. I'll record 5 today. Why? Because I'm so in my mode and so momentum that I know when I get momentum, it doesn't mean anything else suffers. I just create 2 of my days around each of my podcasts or each one. So how do I do 4 podcasts? Well, I have 4 days. Some days I break it down into 4 days. This podcast this time, this podcast that time, this one next one. Tomorrow, this business, these 4 hours, this business 4 hours, because really we need 8 hours sleep. Okay, let's say I want to break it into 4 days also. Okay, I have 3 days to do my businesses or my podcasts or whatever, and then I have 1 day, another 4 hours to dedicate it to my family or my stepchildren or whatever and do those type of things. And so I have room for them or my friends or do a networking event or whatever it is because my brain's functioning. But the last thing that really nailed it, and I've only had about 30 drinks in the last 13 years total.
Nice.
But about 5 years ago, I realized, like, even though I was doing it really sporadically and it was celebratory and it would be when Deborah, you know, would want to have a drink or we'd celebrate something, I just decided it was done. I was having negative consequences, the hangovers, the lack of time. I was losing time, weirdly. I was losing time, even though it wasn't like a blackout. I would lose time that I needed for those multiple days that I'm talking about. So once I got rid of it, it was weirdly how everything aligned, like so uniquely. And everyone is just like, you know, I've been called a lot of things, like because I break my days out, because I control my time schedule so well, or I control my life so well. They're like, oh, you're such a narcissist. No, narcissism controls other people. I'm just controlling me. And so one of the things that it is your performance levels go up so much. Like, it's crazy to me. I used to be, when I first started the podcast, and I was not, I just had, like, around then when I started this was when I decided I wasn't going to do any more drinking for the rest of my life. It was going to become a lifestyle. I don't know why I did. I'm just like, I'm still short of where I want to be. I'm still not making enough distance on my previous self every day. So I'm going to do this. And, you know, what happened, weirdly, is, you know, you stumble for a while. You're like, you're not even sure, because at some point you don't even trust yourself how much output you're going. Like, is this for real? Am I doing the right thing? How am I outperforming everyone? Everyone's like, what are you doing? What's wrong with you? Why are you outperforming everyone? I'm like, I'm just doing me, man. I don't even realize that I'm high performance at this point. Because once all of those things align in your body, like you're talking about, your performance level is just on a whole new level. It's crazy. It's crazy, and it does go back to that Russell Simmons book, honestly.
Nah, it does.
And, it does. And it's like, you know, there's the Bible, and then there's Russell Simmons' book. You know what I'm saying?
That book changed my life. I can't even both, but that one definitely.
Same.
Do You is crazy. Yeah, and by the way, for me, I just stopped drinking 6 months ago. Like, no alcohol, and I've definitely been performing at a way higher level for the 6 months than I've ever done before. That's why, like, I've been able to do things I haven't been able to do before. Like, I'm getting up, I'm making beats every day, no matter what I do, no matter how I feel. I've been able to release these beats quite often, even more, like, which is crazy. And, like, go to the gym, work out. Help, I have a position at Urban Vegan Roots and Kitchen. I do that also. And also, like, going out to, like, music networking events. So I live, like, many lives. But I've really been able to perform at a high level due to this no drinking thing, for real. You know, and prior to that, I had taken up another level before that. I'm off of that now, but I was doing semen retention also, something I learned in one of these books I read. Semen retention is very powerful. I was doing that for a year. I just recently stopped, but that's, you feel like a different, you feel like a different human being. And I just feel like the more things you're willing to sacrifice now is what you'll pay, that you'll get paid in dividends later. So, for real.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about, and the chastity thing, actually. I think that's what you're talking about. And just the upper level, and it depends, and I agree, like, if it's like there's a way to do it in health, and you perform when you're like, you're not concentrating other when it's like for healthy reasons. I don't know how else to describe it without like getting into the detail. We'll have to do it on another podcast, but it is one of those things that that when you are in that parallel, it's kind of incredible what happens to the human in our performance. Right. I will also say this, because I like my spirituality, my mental toughness, my physical toughness all got better as a result of aligning these things just naturally. And like your body looks better, you feel better because the inside changed first. Like these things change the way your body works, and your body's like, your body will tell you you're doing the right thing. You feel better. You eventually start looking better. You know, just by the nature of it, you're like, holy crap, I look fucking dope, dude. And I wasn't even trying to do that. I was just trying to be in shape and live a healthy lifestyle. But holy fuck, I'm fucking fit.
And right.
It's just one of those things where I think it's pretty cool. So, Miles, will you tell us where they can find you online, where everyone can find your YouTube and everything like that?
You can find me online on Instagram, at Hollyhood, P-R-O-D. At Hollyhood P-R-O-D. You can find me, and once you get to my Instagram, all my links is right there. You can click all my links and you can navigate to everything. You know, this interview will probably be up there by then, by the time they get there too, you know. So yeah, and then any other interviews I've done of my beats will be on my page. Yeah, you'll find everything up there.
I love this. Is there anything, like, if you could tell anyone anything in the world, whether they're in music or they're starting off on the entrepreneurial journey or on the music journey, what would you tell them? I'm going to leave us with this. I'm going to let you close us out on this. Like, what would you tell the future, or what do you wish you knew then that you know now?
I wish I would have knew that reading is the cheat code to help you beat life. I feel like I wish I would have knew that. I wish I would have knew. Because through reading, I found all of this information, man. I feel like reading and the audio books is the way you is the cheat code. Like, you know, I didn't really know that young. Like, you know, the thing about it, when I was young, they would have me read books that they wanted me to read. And my cousin always told me, once you find books that you like, you're gonna shine even brighter. So I feel like reading is the cheat code, man. Find some great books to read. Justin sound like he knows some great books. You can hit me up and hit me up. I'll give you my top five books that could change your life. I'm pretty sure Justin got a list also too. And yeah, man, read it. You know.
I know, and it's like I read a lot of like books, help books. Like I talked about the magic of thinking big. Like you need to think really huge. If you think you're thinking big now, that's a good book. You know, Thinking, Grow Rich, Napoleon Hill. These are all books, but also autobiographies. Like, I think I was about 20 years old before I really enjoyed reading. I knew that if I just showed up to class, I didn't need to read the books for school.
Right.
And I just bullshit my way through the rest.
Same.
Yeah. And then I discovered, like, I don't remember whose book it was. It was like I think it was like the Lee Iacocca book. The guy who, like, Chrysler and Ford and all that. And then I got into the Bo Jackson book. And then it was first with like autobiographies, and the Ben Franklin autobiography also. I recommend that to anyone, like his autobiography, the one he wrote himself, not what other people wrote about him, because there's the 13 virtues in there that will blow your mind, and the way you integrate them in your life, it will change your world. Just so anyone, I recommend that book heavily. But once I got into it, I was about 20 years old. And as soon as it stuck, I was in an entrepreneur group. And the reason I picked it up is because this entrepreneur mentor, like some random no one, you know, weirdly, like my fraternity brought Dave Chappelle into town. I got really stoned with him. And like he instilled this crazy knowledge in me. And he's a crazy entrepreneur and a smart dude. And he's just like, read. You know, pick up a book. What's a book you want to read? Pick that book over there. And there's this book, like, freaking sitting there, like Lee Iacocca. Okay? And we were all together. And he's a shy guy. He even came out to a party with us. But once people got around him, he didn't want it. But he was the coolest dude. And the whole reason was is because he liked the band. And one of my fraternity brothers was the leader of the band. His name was Charles Humphreys. I'll give a shout out to him. And
Charles,
and he connected us because I was the president of fraternity. He's like, Pizarro, come over here. You like this? You would love to meet this guy. And I'm like, holy crap, this dude's incredible. Because even at the time, I was a very ambitious. I was always hustling. I was playing soccer. I was running a business. I had 2 years into Food Service Partners by then. We were, you know, doing all the Kaiser Permanente hospitals then. I'm going to college. I'm trying to learn from business people and partners that were older than me. And then I'm also trying to learn from everyone around me. But it never occurred to me to read a book, you know? Yeah. And he's like, just do it. And then all of a sudden he's like, just read 10 pages a day, you know, just in the seat of a pants. And like, weirdly, and I was like, okay, whatever. And I started reading and I didn't think much about the 10 pages a lot, but I would read what I wanted to read every day through college. It's probably why I didn't do very well there, and I had a lot of other things going on, like I said, businesses. But then I got in this entrepreneur circle around 22 years old, and this group of individuals like, you need to read 10 pages a day, 10 right. to 20 pages a day of a book that's going to help you grow. And if you don't do that, and I can't remember who it was. I want to say maybe it's like John Adams or something, but he always had a book in his pocket. And it was the weirdest thing that instilled in me, or Abraham Lincoln. I can't remember who it was, like one of these guys. And then I go and I do my research, and every, all the good people that have ever done anything, Washington Carver, you know, anyone of any, forget whatever, doesn't matter what race, what doesn't matter what ethnicity. If you look at the humans, Gandhi, you look at, you know, anyone that's been in the world that's a leader, Muhammad, that created Islam, you know, they were avid readers. Avid readers. Again, you know, they read a lot. They got their information, you know, all those things. So, gosh, I'm skipping the names of some of the individuals I want to talk. You know, Denzel Washington, always talking about leading and growing and failing forward. You know, there's just so many individuals out there that have used reading to excel their lives. So
exactly, man. It's definitely, man. And let me give them a couple books. Matter of fact,
yeah.
Outwitting the Devil by Napoleon Hill. That's one of my favorite books.
Yes.
Powerful. Yes.
Oh, yeah, we're on the same page, you and I. That's
yeah. Whole other thing. Yeah. How to Read. Oh, damn. What is the name of this one, man? Fuck, it just blew my mind. But let me go with that one. And I would go with let me think of a good marketing book. What would be a good marketing book that I did? Oh man, my mind is going blank right now. Hold up. Now the 25 Laws of Marketing is good, but it's not one of my best. Oh man, it's this one book that this kid wrote. I actually got it from Nipsey Hussle. Nipsey Hussle mentioned a book, and that's what made me go read it after that. Damn, what was the name of that book? Fuck. Damn, I can't even think. It's the reason why Nipsey Hussle actually started selling like $100 CDs, because it was this steak joint in Philly. They were selling $100 cheese sticks, and people was like tripping over that, like, why? You know, either way, it started creating momentum for the business, because there are people that wanted to try the cheesesteak, and then there are people that was just talking about it. So it just created momentum no matter what. It triggered an emotion. And that's what made Nipsey Hussle sell his CD. I can't think of none of those books right now, but definitely Outwitting the Devil. The Secret is definitely more like the spirituality part of it. Outwitting the Devil, The Secret, and definitely Russell Simmons, Do You. And, The Way of a Superior Man. That's a powerful book. So women, if you really, and this book is for women and men. Like, if you really want a superior man, you'll read that book. And if your man doesn't have those qualities, you know that he's not for you. The Way of a Superior Man. That's a powerful book. Very powerful.
I agree with you 100%. And I've actually weirdly just read that book recently. That's the first time I just read it. I'm going through like trying to really find like who I am and make sure that I'm on the right path and excel in growth and be a major part of a relationship with a woman. And I've had to grow like a lot and learn what it is, but I do agree with you 100%. Yep. And a lot of things I've already known or I've learned over the years, but holy crap, did it really put it into perspective and align things right. properly. Just mind-boggling.
No, absolutely. That definitely, like, you know, that teaches you about, like, the thing about it is you could tell a man about what he's doing his day-to-day. Like, if a man is not consistent in his day-to-day, he's not going to be consistent with you. So yeah. At the end of the day, that'll tell you everything. And that book just shows you, like, you know, like, this is how a superior man moves.
Yeah.
Understand that. And that's definitely one of my... Yeah, that's
it's more than ambition. That... It's the way it's executed, and exactly. It's the consistency in which it's done. It's the way you build upon it, and that means in love also. That means in family. Yep. That means in legacy. That means in values. I mean, yes. You know, it's more than a woman creating a dragon and then wanting us to come in and slay the dragon. I get the idea, but we need. It's way more than that. It's more than a knight in shining armor. It's more than all the things. Like there's this whole thing between men and women that exist, you know, in a traditional sense. Not saying that there's not other relationships, but we're talking about this book, and I'll talk about it this way because I am heterosexual. But it's just like the way we build our relationships, okay, and that could be man, woman, woman also. I'm totally for all of those things because I believe love is love. But in my case, man, woman, it's what I know, is that we have ways of structuring it that properly give us more value to each other, yes, to our lives, exactly, to appreciate each other more, to love each other more, to do things, and especially ambitious men who want the good things in life and want to make impact and influence, that's a book you have to read.
No, absolutely. Absolutely, man. Absolutely. It teaches you like understanding, like if you have like a cold personality, you might need somebody that has a hot personality to balance that relationship off. It teaches you so many different things, like these things that you're not really aware of. Like understand, like, you know, you have to be self-aware of what you're dating and who you're dating, because like that's how you know you learn better about yourself. You know, you have to audit everything about you if you really want to change it. That's definitely one of the ways you have to audit that, man.
Yeah. So, and I'm going to leave everyone with this because I finally like slowing my brain down a little bit here. when we talked about the reading, I'm going to give you five people in history that have made huge impact. They're no longer alive. So for me, I look at leaders as their life. I've learned that I don't think too much of people that are still alive, including myself, because it takes a lifetime, and when you die is when we should actually judge the life, because there's so many people that look great in the instant or a flash in the pan or lightning in the bottle, but don't actually, or they turn narcissistic or they declare themselves dictators like Napoleon. Even though he started off as a good guy for democracy, he eventually crowned himself dictator. So I'm very careful about how I do this. So I'm going to give you my five throughout history. It was John Adams. It was Abraham Lincoln. It's Frederick Douglass. It's Nelson Mandela and Benjamin Franklin. Those five individuals, four of them were Americans per se, and one is South African, Nelson Mandela, but all of them read. Nelson Mandela read and read and read, and he went from a violent activist to using his brain in prison and building friendships with the prison guards and building relationships with people and seeing that, okay, I don't want to swing the pendulum too far. I need to make sure that everyone's equal and the same. And same with Abraham Lincoln. Same with Benjamin Franklin. Same with John Adams. Same with Frederick Douglass. They went about it in a way that actually aligned people through intellect, not violence. And they did that all through books. Okay, and I just want to put that on everyone, because those individuals had huge impacts on humanity and the way we are. So, good, bad, or indifferent, those people have major change and impact and influence. And the reason it started is because they were avid readers.
Yeah, absolutely. You can't cheat the game, kid, like that. You only can cheat it through the books. That's it.
I know. That's a weird thing. You got to teach yourself. It can't be caught. I mean, it can't be taught. It has to be caught. And the only way to catch it is be willing to catch it. either from others, but the only way you really catch stuff is reading it. I can't tell you otherwise. It's just the way it is, man.
Nah, exactly, man. Experience and reading is the best teachers. So yeah. That's a fact.
Yeah. So thank you, Miles, for coming on the show. I appreciate
Thank
you
for you. Having me, man. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. I always appreciate these high level conversations.
Yeah, we're going to have another one. I'm going to have you back on for a part two because I have a feeling we run into each other this weekend at the networking event. We just keep going. And just so everyone knows in the audience, Miles came up with this name that Solutions Only. And the group that we're in. So we always talk about we're the solutions only crew because we're not going to complain about anything. We're just going to step into action and we're going to provide solutions for the world and make the world a better place. So I think that's really cool. It's why we align so well. And I appreciate you. The audience, I thank you guys for listening in. I appreciate you guys. I love you guys. Thanks. I know this is a new show, so we're just starting to get momentum here, but I appreciate everyone listening in, and I love you guys. You can find us on Spotify or wherever else you grow yourself through podcasts. You can find me at Justin Bizarro, BIZZARRO, Justin Bizarro on Instagram. And you can find me on Facebook, although you have to ask to be my friend on there. That one's a little more guarded, but Instagram is free for everyone. And again, that's BIZZARRO. But in addition to that, you can also find me on Justin the Food Entrepreneurs podcast. You can also find me at the Night Dashor with Justin Bizarro, DASHOR, where we talk about the delivery game and how it's taking over the world and what this means, these giant companies emerging that are basically our gatekeepers into our homes and into our businesses now. And then you can also find me on the Centurion Leadership Battalion with Justin Bizarro, where we talk about leadership, we talk about societal things, we talk a little bit about mental health and what it means for leadership now, and sort of what's going on there. So I talk a lot about the core values that Miles and I just talked about, which is the reading, the discipline, in deeper levels. So thank you, everyone, for listening in, and we're out.
All right.